I've got to grow and increase my capacity for this. It'll go bad the first 10 times, probably. Yeah. It's going to go bad and feel like it's not working. You just got to rep it and rep it and rep it.
Welcome to the Skilled Dad Podcast. This is the podcast for dads of all seasons to learn the things that they can do and engage so that they can go and equip the next generation for success. Here we sit down with everyday dads just like you to learn from their story, get inspired, and then start getting after it. So we invite you to join in, see what you can take away from this story, and apply to your life on your journey to becoming a skilled dad. Hey guys, welcome to the Skilled Dad Podcast. I'm Zach Reeser, your host, and today I'm with my very good friend, Mr. Jake Smith. Jake, how are you, sir?
Hello, Zach. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, it's good.
It's always interesting when you sit and talk for a little bit, and then you press record, and then you're like, hello.
We've already been here.
This is deja vu. So this is like behind the scenes for anybody that's tuning in and listening at this point. But Jake is a special friend for me. We met in the mountains of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with a large group of other men, a lot of influential guys, but had the opportunity to get out there and just be real out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way back, did I pick you up and take you up there too?
Seems like that's right. And I just want to say about that experience, I still flinch when I think about it, because those guys were so impressive. I felt like the least impressive guy in the room the whole time. So I still twitch a little bit thinking about that experience with those guys.
I think there's something to that whenever we're in the room, we might feel like the least impressive person in the room.
Well,
even if
it was more than a feeling for me, I think it might have actually been true.
Well, so you were there. But it was a great group.
Yeah, it was. Great guys.
And but on that trip, we just had the opportunity to get to know each other, connect. And even though we were out in Colorado, we're both from Nashville and end up living like two blocks away from each other or something like that.
It was a great discovery.
It was. It was awesome. And then after that, you know, we'll talk more about this, but you started something that has been really impactful for a lot of people. And we'll dive into that. But I was part of one of your groups, and this was during the COVID period. I think it was the first virtual group.
Yeah, probably one of the first iterations of that. Yeah, I didn't even think the work I do could be done virtually.
Yeah.
And then COVID made me try it anyway. Uh-huh. And it turns out you can do deep work virtually. So that was a good discovery too.
It was great. And we had a great group. Ours was all guys in that group. And then we're together for over the year. But tell us a little bit about yourself outside of me, just kind of giving this small bio.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, I was a pastor for 21 years, and in the last couple of years have really honed in on what I feel like has become my specialty, which is deep internal work. And so I'm just of the age now where I needed to start getting real serious about how do I want to make the most of the time I've got left. And for me, it came to kind of taking all the time, all the working hours that I would spend during the week and the resources that I can generate and pour them into a very specific aspect of ministry, which is smaller groups of people, very high touch, guiding deep into the heart and soul with the purpose of rediscovering in some cases, recovering in others, parts of us that just got lost or went missing along the way as men in our life, and get those parts back, recover them, get them reattached, start to nourish them so that we can show up more fully as men to the people and things who matter most, namely our spouses and our kids.
I would say, just from experience too, also holistically as a person, how that also helps you respond better, or at least be more in touch with how you are in all facets: home, friends, work.
Yes.
You know, as we equip ourselves and
in the one area, that like that internal self area, how it helps make us more impactful in the other areas.
Yes, in my research, I've discovered theological research, but also practical research in life. We all have, as men, this thing called a spiritual anatomy. And like our physical anatomy consists of systems, muscular system, skeletal system, and so on, our spiritual anatomy consists of systems too. We got a heart system, we've got a soul system, we've got a mind system, and we have a strength system. Jesus confirmed this when he was asked, what's the most important commandment in the law? Without batting an eye, he said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. So we got these four parts of us that what it looks like to be a whole man, or a mature man, or a fully functioning man, is to be able to have access to these four parts of me, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then to be able to show up and express all four parts within the context of three types of relationships. Our relationship with God, my relationship with others, mm-hmm. and my relationship with self, which might be, for a man, the most neglected one of all. Mm.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on that one here a little bit. The neglected part. For anyone that's tuning in for the first time or has jumped on and been listening, there's been this sentiment that I think in some ways has shifted, but there's a lot of different camps. Feelings stir up a lot of feelings in guys. Mm-hmm. And it can go in a variety of states, it seems. Yeah. Now, you've seen this all the time. And whether it's a kind of a frou-frou element, or you think of like The Bachelorette, somebody brought up that sentiment a while ago. So before anybody says, I'm going to roll out of here, you helped me look at that topic differently. Mm-hmm. And I remember what you said when we were talking similar topic to this, is you may not be man enough to face those feelings.
Yeah.
And it's a different paradigm on what quote unquote feelings are. Mm-hmm. But just knowing, A, you're a fun guy, you're a cool guy, and you deliver it in a way that is relatable and understandable. Hmm. That as a guy, you know, coming in and saying, what's this group about, or what is this topic about? You know, makes it more comfortable.
Yeah.
But what would you say about the frou-frou element that some guys might be thinking about as just this topic comes up, or soft, or whatever you want
to call it? First, I'm having really good feelings about myself after you said all those nice things about me, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
No, it's true. A lot of guys are so afraid of this word feelings that they end up kind of bowing up or talking tough or talking about it all cunting or riding motorcycles or something to try to distance themselves from what is maybe been labeled a feminine thing. Mm. And I often say the same thing, probably similar that I said to you, to those guys. I was like, man, you're not man enough to come sit in a circle with me and go deep into the heart and soul, you know, like you're just not ready, you know, for the, you don't have the capacity or the strength to be able to do that yet. And the truth of the matter, it's a joke. Yeah. But the truth of the matter is, I didn't have the capacity for that for most of my life. And I'm still growing and stretching and strengthening the muscles that had atrophied for me in that heart system part of me as a man. Mm-hmm. And so we all get it honest. We're taught from an early age that if we try to live life with our heart, we try to face life with our heart as men, life's gonna chew us up and spit us out. So rather than being nurtured, our well-meaning fathers, when we're young, and we come home with a report that I got bullied on the playground as a six-year-old or whatever it is, most of us were taught the same thing. Go handle your business. You gotta man up, you gotta be tough. This is ultimately what a man is.
Yeah.
What we gotta remember is Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. You know, he wept. And he wanted to gather people, you know, of Jerusalem under his wings mother gathers her chicks. You know, like these are not manly ideas, and yet here was the perfect man embodying these. He said, let the children come to me. Mm. You know, he wanted them to sit on his lap. He wanted to nurture them and care for them. Okay, So there is a confusion often, I think, between what we often label as feminine in our culture, this thing called emotionalism, okay, rather than thinking rationally, rather than being able to tough something out or have endurance or face hard things. It seems like the opposite of that is this idea of emotionalism. I melt down, I cry, I become emotionally expressive. And what we have to understand first is there is a huge difference between feelings and emotionalism. Those are not the same thing. A lot of times in my groups, people will say, you know, like women will say, well, I'm really, really good at that, so I don't actually need your, you know, the heart part of what you do. And men will say, I've got no interest in the heart part of what you do. And they're both talking about the same thing. They're talking about emotionalism rather than feelings. And I say the same thing to both of them. I say, you're actually probably not great at feelings work, even if you have no trouble expressing yourself emotionally or you know, accessing tears, whatever it is. That doesn't necessarily mean you have this really attached, well-nourished heart system that's good with feelings. You know.
So the definition of what they're thinking, kind of like the definition of vulnerable, can mean a lot of different things, but they're talking about the same thing.
They're both talking about
not naming it that
emotionalism, which is actually ironically the opposite of feelings work, because emotionalism is often used to avoid feelings. You know, I spent most of my life, when you talk about being detached from this heart part of us, or that heart part of us being malnourished as men, what we're actually talking about is, you know, what I spent most of, the reality of most of my life, right? I spent most of my life committed to not much more than not having feelings. Like, what do I got to do to not have feelings? What do I got to drink? What do I got to watch? How do I need to perform? What role do I need to play for you? What problem do I need to solve to not have to face these things called feelings, okay? The only thing I was equally committed to was making sure you didn't have them either. Because if you have them, I'm going to have them. So what do I got to do for you, with you? What do I got to solve for you? What do I need to, how do I need to buck you up? How do I need to hand you something to read? Like, whatever it is, to make sure you don't have them so that I don't have to have them. And if we're not careful, if we're detached and we double down on remaining detached from this heart part of us, we end up operating within our family units like that too, which is why you get frustrated with your kids when they're kind of needing you, or they're being whiny, or they're not listening, or whatever it is. Well, guess what? That's making you have feelings. And so you end up, you know, snapping at them, raging at them, being impatient with them, dismissing them, making demands, you know, powering up on them, whatever it is, because they're making you have feelings. You don't want to have feelings. So what do I got to do to control my kids? What do I got to do to shut down whatever this neediness is so I don't have to have feelings? And you do the same thing with your wife. So what we teach, when I talk about being man enough to develop and grow the capacity and the strength of this heart part of us, is actually not so much being able to express emotion and all this kind of stuff. It's more about, how do I grow my strength and my capacity to be able to tolerate having feelings myself, whether I express them or show them to you or not? How do I increase my capacity to carry more, handle more, hold space for people more, and be able to hold the capacity of my own feelings instead of drinking them away, avoiding them with hobbies, working longer and harder hours, also I don't have to have these things called feelings.
Just cope, block it.
Coping.
Yeah.
Repressing, numbing out.
The biggest one for, well, I mean, they're all impactful. One of the biggest ones for me was when we were talking about anger, right? So maybe from a high level, can you just cover the top feelings?
Sure.
And what those are, but then I'll dive into what I mean by that when it comes to anger. Because it's come up a couple times in the podcast. That I've talked to guys already, and then I had a number of people reach out and say, oh, you know what, I did that too. So we're all in this thing together, but separately. So let's talk about that. It might help set the table on just a couple of comments we're going to make.
Sure, about the eight core feelings?
The eight core feelings, yeah.
Sure. So the feelings framework that I use most often in my work is, it's just called the eight core feelings, and it's from Dr. Chip Dodd. He wrote a book called Voice of the Heart. And according to him, like, those eight feelings are basically the only feelings you got. And they are anger, hurt, fear, sad, lonely, shame, guilt, and glad. Like, that's it, right? They look simple enough. It's, you know, if you write them in a column on a page, like, they look simple enough. And it's not an oversimplification. They work like primary colors. So like red, yellow, blue aren't the only colors, but if you mix a few of them together in different ways, they can create millions of colors. Well, you hold the tension of a couple feelings off that eight-feeling list when they're true inside you in different ratios, and you can come up with billions of different expressions of feelings, right? But those are the primaries. And it's important to be able to identify and name and open myself to have those primary feelings when they're true inside of me for a couple of reasons. One is because if I don't know how to do that, the feeling doesn't go away. It just devolves, and it becomes twisted and sick. For example, fear, when I'm unwilling to admit it, open myself to it, allow myself to experience it, hold the tension of it, talk out loud with people who are safe about it, it devolves into anxiety and control. Okay? So now, instead of acknowledging my fear and being able to own it, take ownership of my fear and admit it, I carry around anxiety, sometimes a low-grade anxiety, sometimes a spike, overwhelming type sense of anxiety, and I start trying to control people and things that A, aren't mine to control in the first place, and B, I probably can't control even if I try. Okay. But when I'm able to identify and name the feeling when it's true inside of me, it leads me to a gift. It always guides me to a gift. And the gift of fear, when I'm willing to follow it as a guide, is faith and wisdom. And so, funny enough, you know, in the church world especially, we often hear these cliches like choose faith, not fear. And the irony is, there is no faith without fear. The only way I can arrive at true faith is if I'm willing to walk through the doorway of my felt fear. And the other gift is wisdom, which means I can step into the fear, I can walk my fear wisely. Wise steps, knowing what kind of choices and decisions I need to make, when I need to step ahead, when I need to step back and retreat, you know, those types of things.
You can't have faith without fear.
100%.
That's wild.
Why do I need faith if I'm not tapped into my fear?
Right. Yeah. The anger one, what that's kind of popped up, and you mentioned it earlier too, just when you lash out at the kiddos, you're feeling some things, and it's just like overwhelm, whatever it is, and boom, is that anger's never alone.
Yeah.
Right? Usually it's accompanied by fear and hurt.
Yeah. There's two on that list of eight that are never alone.
Yep.
One of them is glad.
Yeah.
You'll never just be glad. You'll always have one of those other seven attached to it. The other one's anger. Anger's never alone. It'll always have one of the other seven attached to it. Now, as you know from group, all anger is want.
Yeah.
Like, anger is deep want. The gift it wants to lead me to is passion, and if I ignore it, it turns into depression, because it takes a lot of energy to resist my want. And it gets confused a lot, interestingly enough, with the impairment, the far impairment of the one we were just talking about, fear. So fear, if I ignore it or don't admit that I have it, I'm not willing to allow myself to experience it when it's true inside of me, it keeps going past that impairment of control and anxiety and moves into isolation, where it becomes rage. All rage is a last-ditch effort to control things that I can't control. Now, that's often rage confused with this other feeling called anger, which is my want, okay? Now, get your head around that.
Yeah.
Rage is actually not about your anger, it's about your fear. So what's really going on, for example, when you're raging at your kids? It's really not about your anger with them. It's about how scary it is when you saw them not put on their shoes after you asked them 47 times to do it, and all of a sudden you're projecting out and they're 42 years old playing Xbox without their shoes on, late for work, getting fired from their job, and they can't pay their rent, you know?
Never out of my house.
Yeah, you're not aware of any of that, right? It's all subconscious, but that rage is, I will control you and make you do this responsible thing so that you're not a loser when you grow up. But if we're not doing feelings work, if we're detached from our heart, we're not aware of any of that.
We just know we're mad.
We just rage at our kids, right?
Yeah.
Again, and it's about fear, not anger.
Man. Well, that's what, as a dad in that space, that's one of the things I've heard a lot of, is when I yell at my kids or I just get frustrated. There's always, you know, lots going on, whether you call it chaos or just busy, busy.
Yeah. Chaos is a good word. It is chaos.
Chaos is a good word.
Yeah.
So how can we have controlled chaos? But in that sense, being able to tap in, but that also helps with the marriage concept. And so turning it a little bit, as a dad who does this with people, what's been your experience? And we haven't talked as much about your kiddos yet and family, but how has it helped you, even as someone that's working day to day with people in your family life, and with, as a dad, as a husband, some of the maybe tactical, practical skills that you've learned that you could help equip some other guys with? And at the end of this, guys, for more information on where to follow Jake, connect with Jake, and learn more about what he does, your group's called Plumline.
P-L-U-M-L-I-N-E. And the website is goplumline.com.
Goplumline.com. Yeah. So we'll hit that up again and put it in the notes, but just so you can check it out. But from your experience as a dad, as a husband, and then, you know, what you've learned, done, and maybe even not done well, but are learning, like all of us, what are some thoughts there?
Well, this whole thing started, like this work, me doing this work, all started for me when I was confronted by my daughter when she was 4 years old. So I got two sons and a daughter. Today, my son is, my oldest son is 15, my middle son's 13, and my daughter's 10. And so this was about 6 years ago. I was putting her to bed one night, and her little voice, her little four-year-old voice emerges out of the darkness, and she says, "Hey, Dad, if I could line up all the dads in the world," and I'm thinking, this is my dad moment. Like, I will remember this for the rest of my life. This is going to be beautiful. And it was not beautiful. She said, "If I could line up all the dads in the world and I could pick a nice dad or you, I would still pick you."
A nice dad or you?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean, it crushed me. And I circled back and I immediately, and I just said, "Oh, honey," I said, "is daddy not very nice?" And she said, "Not really, but I'd still pick you." And it was such a beautiful confrontation of giving me feedback of what it was like to be with me, accompanied with this unconditional love of, "You're still my dad. I'm never going to leave you." And she was probably, Zach, the only one in my life that could have given me that kind of feedback at that point in time, where I wouldn't have dismissed her, dismissed it, like, "That's your opinion," or something, or become defensive, you know. But I could not resist the sentiments of my own four-year-old daughter. And I walked out of her room that night not okay, because I was a guy that lived most of my life. Remember, I'm a pastor at this point. From mind and strength, learning and doing. And I'm telling you, I was pretty high marks in both of those spiritual anatomical systems, like pretty high on mine, my ability to have good theology and have good doctrine and problem solve and strategize and all these mind types of things. And I was pretty good in strength. That's why I was laying with her in that bed in the first place, putting her down, because a good dad, no matter how long of a day he's had, puts his little girl on his back, walks her up those dang stairs, reads her a story, and lies with her till she goes to sleep every night. So I had a philosophy of fathering, and I had the strength to express it and pull it off. But what she said to me that night was, "Dad, I can't get to your heart." Like, "I don't have access to your heart." And I'm a dad that wasn't okay with that. And I had to figure that out. So I went on a journey, not even knowing what I was going after or what I needed to discover for me, and not even knowing if I could change anything about it or get it back. Like, maybe this is my quote-unquote personality, and it's just like, it's where I'm at.
I'm stuck with it.
Like, this is me. Like, take me or leave me, you know? And what a cop-out that is. Like, we can change. We can grow. We can heal. We can transform. And when we are serious as men about doing that work, you know who benefits? Sure, we do. But so do our kids.
Yeah.
And so does our wife. And so do the people who report to us. And so do the people who are trying to lead us. And so does our neighbor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Ripple effects throughout. 100%.
Changes everything.
100%.
Yeah.
It makes me go like, ugh, just hearing that story. It's like when my little girl will sometimes say, "Daddy, I love you, but you're not my friend today." I don't know why, but that story of like, if I could choose a nice dad or you, I'd still choose you. That puts you on a journey. And for anyone that is listening right now. How lucky would we be if we get set on a journey like that, if that's the kind of wake-up call we need?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we don't get that. Whether we don't have a solid band of brothers around us to objectively say, hey, get your stuff together. Mm-hmm. Or depending on the relationship with our wife. But it's, I consider that very fortunate. And I'm glad that it happened. The one person that could impact you that way said that thing. And now you're helping a bunch of people. So
yeah. I hope so.
I think so.
Not I hope so. I am.
You are.
They express that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's awesome, man. And so outside of the work that you do and kind of applying that to the family life, what are some other key takeaways or lessons that you've learned? Because you've got 15, so you've got a almost independent driver.
Yeah.
A 13, so welcome to the teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
And then a 10-year-old daughter who, is it feeling like she's moving into the teen? I feel like that would be different with a daughter.
Yeah. She hasn't she hasn't quite shifted into,
yeah,
I don't need dad. Like, she still runs to me when I come home. She still wants me to put her to bed every night. So she's not hit that,
yeah,
even that pre-teen, that tween year yet. But I'd say three things, Zach, that I would offer all dads, regardless of what age your kids are. Three things that you can immediately start to apply today, like, mm-hmm, today, okay? Number one, all of these, by the way, hang under this banner of your mind and strength is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your mind and strength as a man is not enough. You must begin to practice and nourish and work out and exercise your heart and your soul too. So three things here. First, under that banner,
mm-hmm,
caring deeply for yourself is critical if you're going to be the kind of dad, husband, worker that you want to be. Like, you must learn to care deeply for yourself. And here's why. You will not be able to care properly for them if you don't know how to care properly for you.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you won't be able to, period. I'm not going to give a crap about your feelings if I don't give a crap about my own. I'm not going to care properly and in a healthy way for you if I don't know how to care properly for me. And that's as simple as turn off your work at the end of the day. You've,
yeah,
got to learn to do that. Like, you're not more of a man if you're working 60 hours a week or 80 hours a week or whatever it is and convincing yourself how important you are and nobody else can do what you do. That's just blind.
Mm.
And it's not good leadership either.
Mm.
Like, if that's what you got to do to get your job done, that's so important, you know, like, I just don't buy that anymore. So figure out how to let today's work be enough. Even if it didn't all get finished, it'll still be waiting for you tomorrow. And you've got to learn. This isn't about your kids and your wife right now, by the way. This is about learning to care for yourself, learning to rest in the work that you are able to get done today and turn it off. And when I mean turn it off, I mean power down the phone, power down the email, power down the laptop, all the stuff, turn it off and practice presence in the evenings. Again, will that benefit your wife and kids? Sure. But it's really, that one's about you.
Mm.
Like, you've got to learn to have this healthy approach to your work rhythms in the week. So learning to turn it off and rest in the evenings and getting back up again and working your rear end off the next day is fine.
Yeah.
But
real quick on that,
yeah,
the turning it off element. What are some things that you've either heard from other people or you yourself have used to make that transition from the work mindset to the home mindset?
Yeah.
I've heard a few different guys have different things, but
yeah,
just curious kind of what is that for you? For someone's listening, whether it's their first time or it's a repeat, getting a tactical, practical element,
yeah,
it's like, okay, that's something I could try rather than just getting in the car, still thinking about stuff, get out of the car,
totally,
email's still going, boom.
Yeah, there is a gear shift there.
Yeah.
So that it's a valid question. I would say learn to turn off your phones, etc., in the garage or in the driveway when you pull in. Like, I'll just be honest with you, I'll drive home, put my car in park, turn off the ignition, and I'll check my email or my text message one last time just to shore up anything I need to shore up, and that just helps me turn it off for the day, okay? honestly, sometimes I'll end up sitting in my car for another 5 or 10 minutes trying to return a couple of things before I'm going to power down for the night and literally put my phone on a charger and put that phone in a drawer. Psychologically, it's just like, I'm done with this for the day.
Yeah.
Okay. Then after I power down my phone, I will sit in my car and I will do two things. One, I will do some what's called soul breathing. Okay. And I'll do this for 1 minute in my driveway or in my garage. Mm-hmm. You breathe in through your nose 4 seconds and fill the belly. And then you breathe out through the mouth 8 seconds. It's a long controlled exhale. Okay. You reach the end of the exhale at the end of 8 seconds. And as you exhale, you let your shoulders relax. So in through the nose, 4 seconds, fill the belly, out through the mouth, long and slow, 8 seconds, letting your shoulders relax. And you breathe like that for 1 minute. Breath is paradoxical, okay? It's involuntary, but you can also control it. So this is just slowing yourself down by concentrating on slowing your breathing down, letting it grow deeper. It relaxes you, okay? At the end of that meeting, I check in with myself. And I just care about it. Like, I don't shame myself for it. I don't think it's, I just check in. Like, where am I at? Like, what's going on inside of me? Wow, I'm really anxious, which anxiety is fear. I didn't get this done. I didn't get that done. This meeting is waiting for me tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon. I haven't hit this number yet or that number yet. I still got, wow, I got a lot of fear and anxiety inside of me, okay? The most important part of feelings work is knowing where you're at. It's not like emoting or putting it on people or, you know, it's for you. It's like, where am I at, okay? And if I know where I'm at, what that means is I'm not going to go in there disconnected from where I'm at. And now I'm controlled compulsively by all these things that I'm not connected to that are going on inside. So this is where I'm dismissing my kids. I'm impatient with my wife, whatever it is. I got to know where I'm at. So I get me, okay, just by checking in with myself. Show myself a little compassion. I go, man, there's a lot on me. Like, maybe, you know, there's a lot on me. And I'm feeling pretty anxious. And I'm going to intentionally choose to stop thinking about it, turn off the work for today. It's still going to be waiting for me tomorrow morning. I can get up as early as I want tomorrow morning and pick this back up again. But tonight, I'm turning it off. I know I got a lot of anxiety, or I know I got a lot of shame about how I mishandled something today, or I know I got a lot of sadness about how that deal fell through and it mattered to me and I was so close. All right, I'm going to turn it all off now, knowing where I'm at. I'm going to walk in there. I'm going to be with my dang family. Okay? So that's how I shift from work to home. And I'm going to give my full attention and my full energy, my full engagement to them. Right?
How long do you think someone, if someone's listening and they're like, you know, I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
They do it the first time.
Yeah.
And I tried it once. Right? Yeah. Whether you read Atomic Habits or The Power of Habit, which is an older book or whatever, how many times would you say, just keep, you know, do it. Give it a try for this amount of time to see how it takes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this is the man up part of feelings. Don't be a wuss. Like, the reason Tom Brady can throw that pass to Gronk in the back of the end zone perfectly every time has less to do with both of their athletic skill and more to do with reps.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, Gronk's run that route and Brady's thrown that pass 10,000 times. They can do that in their sleep. Okay? This is like that too. I've got to grow and increase my capacity for this. It'll go bad the first 10 times, probably. It's going to go bad and feel like it's not working. You just got to rep it and rep it and rep it. And it's okay if you just say, I'm just going to take a minute. I'm just going to check my email, text, power down my phone, and spend 15 seconds breathing, or I'm just going to do four of them in and out and do a quick kind of, where am I at? Okay, ooh, not good. All right, I'm walking in here. Okay. Even that is better than nothing.
Yeah.
But again, remember why you do it. You're doing it to care for yourself and to gear shift so that you can go in there. It's actually good for you to go in there and actually try to be present with your family too. The other thing, one last caveat I'll say with this one tip is, don't demand this of anyone else but you. Lead by example, not by force. So if you, like, you might be lonely when you walk in there because all your kids are on screens and devices and phones, and your wife might be on her screen or her device on your phone, and you turn yours off and put it in a drawer. So all you're going to do is feel lonely. You're going to look around, and now you're going to connect with how lonely it is to be with your family who are all on their phones. But you're going to sit there and watch them, and you know what? You're going to open your capacity for loneliness. You're just going to go, man, I would love to connect with them. And you're going to let your desire and your longing and your want for that to grow in you too just by watching their faces all lit up. with glowing screens. And you can ask them for what you want and need. Hey, buddy, would you be willing to do this? Hey, honey, would you be willing to go on a walk? You know, whatever it is. You can invite, you can offer, but don't start throwing your powerful weight around and demand, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're all turning off our stuff and we're all going to, you know, like, don't do that.
Right.
You know, and now you're just raging again.
You might, it might get done for like a night or two, and then you have other byproducts that are just,
totally. You get you as a dad, and your true passions and longings and desires will grow in you when you start putting yours away and you start looking at and noticing them.
Yeah.
And then just see what comes of that. Like, one day you'll invite them and one of them will say yes. And you'll have this beautiful moment. And like, before you know it, the culture of your home starts to change.
Mm. We'll move to the third one here in a second, but you told me something once, and I've used this so many times. You get credit every time, I promise. I said, a gentleman once told me, your yeses don't mean anything if you can't say no.
Yeah.
And that's that relationship factor. So just you saying, hey, bud, you know, let's do this. Or, hey, let's go play a game or whatever it is. They might say no, but that is an indication of the relationship. You have to be open to the word no. It also gives you a kind of a framework of where you are, and now you get to practice change management.
Yeah.
If you're in business, you know, it's like, okay, this is our culture.
Yeah.
It's our business culture, it's our family culture. How can I help work on me to model a way to navigate that and show like what we want to do and what's good in a different culture?
Yes. That's actually kind of the second thing that I would say in these like practical tips that you can go and apply today underneath this banner of your mind and strength are not enough. The second thing I would say is, when you are willing to care for yourself, the first thing, put your phone away, turn the work off at the end of the day, gear shift, walk in, be present with your family. The second thing is, when you are with your kids, okay, when they do say yes or whatever it is not about the activity. Okay, it's not about going camping. It's not about throwing the ball in the yard. It's not about having a tea party with your daughter. Like, it's not about the activity. It's about meaningful presence. It's about connection. So in those rare moments where they don't say no, okay, and they do say yes, make sure you bring your meaningful presence. It's not about the activity. How do you do that? Eye contact. Like, if that's all you did, like, there's really weird sci-fi type studies out right now that say you can actually pass your neurons to another person through eye contact.
Really?
That's super freaky, okay? Without saying any words, just looking at your son or looking at your daughter, you can change the way they think and feel about themselves just by looking at them, okay? It's crazy. Cool.
That is cool.
But eye contact is meaningful presence. Hold hands or touch. Okay, ask real questions. And here's what a real question is. One that doesn't have a yes or no answer.
Like open-ended questions.
Yeah. Open-ended questions. They don't have one word in. How was your day? Good.
Yeah.
What'd you do? Nothing. Like, you know, ask specific questions that requires, you know, kind of a more open response. Okay. Hold space. If kids end up coming up with, I had a really hard day. I failed a test. I was bullied, I had a blow up with a friend at school, I was alone, like whatever it is, learn to hold space for that. You don't have to give them advice, you don't have to fix that, you don't have to solve that problem. Meaningful presence is heart stuff. Meaningful presence. And so you can ask them questions back if they show up with stuff like that. What was that like for you? You can tell your own story about when you were a kid and you experienced something similar. Oh gosh, I'm so sorry, honey, I know what that's like. I remember when I was your age, this type of thing. I remember when I was your age, that type of thing, okay? So holding space, but it's not about the activity. The activity is far less important than your meaningful presence, okay?
If I look long enough into my kids' eyes, I'm holding on to that one because I need to find that study. Will it help me to get them to clean the room?
You get them to clean the room. It's not hypnosis.
Yeah. I have seen some of those studies popping out, and it's just kind of interesting. But that's great with the eye contact, just that engagement and that being there, right, with them.
Yeah.
We've used the term "be where your feet are."
Mm-hmm.
The engaging questions. But the other thing, and I hope I'm not getting ahead, not knowing what the third one is. But you and I have talked briefly, and at some point I'd love to look more at this concept, because the term vulnerability comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. And it means almost like the emotionalism versus feelings. I've not heard that, so I like that a lot. But vulnerability means a lot of different things to different people, it seems. Mm-hmm. And so the definition of a word is important. However, let's say that in the sense that someone is being, in this case, your kids are coming to you with something real.
Yeah.
Let's say it was a friend, right? So we promote being vulnerable with people, ideally with people you trust in the safe mm-hmm. space, but not everyone knows how to necessarily receive that if they're not kind of in the same plane. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you, that I'd learned from you as far as one of the easiest ways to receive that, mm-hmm. if you don't know like what to do, you're like, I don't know how to respond because it stirs up my own feelings, is just say thank you. And after engaging with the kids and just listening, being able to say thank you, or to a person at work or wherever that's bringing something to you through trust, it's powerful just to say thank you.
Sure. Thanks for showing up.
That's all I need to say.
Thanks for showing up.
Thanks for showing up.
You could have hidden that. You could have masked that. You could have acted like you're all good and you chose to show up, and that can be a gift.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be overwhelming, but it can be a gift. So when you say thank you, you're genuinely grateful that they were willing to not mask what was going on inside of them and showed up authentically and vulnerably. So you can just say thanks. Another thing you can do, because it can feel overwhelming, especially if the problem's big, and it's like, what do I do with this? Like, mm-hmm. You're kind of wondering, like, what do you want with me? Like, why are you telling me this?
Right.
And it can almost feel like you're trying to make me responsible for your thing, you know? So another thing you can simply do is just say, hey, what do you want and need with me? Mm-hmm. Like, they show up with something that's vulnerable, that's hard, that's painful, that they're having big feelings about, that they're struggling with, whatever it is. You can just simply go, man, thanks for showing up. Hey, what do you want or need with me in that?
Yeah.
And this is where the your ability to say no has to come into play, okay? Because just because they ask doesn't mean you have to say yes. That's like, if you can't say no, your yes doesn't mean anything anyway. You're just in a codependent relationship.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So here's the best way I know how to describe a healthy relationship. And this is less about with your kids, because you're responsible for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, their well-being is on you. Okay. That is not true of any other relationship in your life, even your spouse. Mm-hmm. That's big what I just said.
That is big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're not responsible for your wife's well-being because she's a grown-up. She's responsible for her well-being. Now, I'm response able with my wife. I am able to respond to her. I'm able to respond to my friends or my coworkers. The ability to respond is different than responsibility. Like, it's on me. It's my job.
You own it.
You own it. So when someone comes to you vulnerably and you say, hey, thanks for showing up to me. What do you want or need with me? If they ask me for something that's going to cause me to sacrifice my own family, my own well-being, etc. I got to be able to say no to that person. So here's healthy relationship, best I can describe it.
Yeah.
Six distinguishing factors that define a healthy relationship. Number one, I am willing to have and honor my own feelings with you in this relationship. Like, I'm going to be allowed to be hurt by you, sad with you, ashamed when I'm with you, afraid when I'm with you. Like, I'm going to get to have those, okay? Number two, I am willing to ask you for what I want and need, okay? Number three, I'm willing to hear no, because it's not your job to ensure my wants and needs are met, okay? You know whose job it is? My job. I'm a grown butt man.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's my job to ensure that the wants and needs I have are met in a healthy way, not yours. So that's why I'm willing to hear no. When you need to tell me no. Now, if you always say no, we don't have a relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you can't say no, your yes doesn't mean anything. It's a codependent relationship, and that's not good either. Okay. Here's the other three distinguishing marks. I'm willing for you to have feelings with me in the relationship. I don't have to remove them, get you to feel better. Well, like, if you're mad at me, if you're hurt by something I did, if you're sad, like, I'm just okay with you having feelings. Okay. With me. Number five, I'm willing to be asked by you for what you want and need. And number six, I'm willing to say no. Mm-hmm. Healthy relationships 101.
There it is.
I'm willing to have feelings, ask for what I want and need. I'm willing to hear no. Willing for you to have feelings. Willing for you to ask me for what you want and need. And I'm willing to say no.
Yeah.
Healthy relationships 101.
Yeah.
Does not apply to your kids. Okay. That applies to everybody else.
Marriage, friends, outside. Kids are different.
Yeah.
It might be 101. Mm-hmm. But I think it might be an elective that not all of us have taken. So.
Yes. Yes.
We're in it to learn.
No, that's right. Most of us are playing roles in other people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, what role do I got to play? What role have I psychologically agreed to? What role have I psychologically been assigned by you without even really realizing it?
And I got the term in-laws comes to mind.
Oh, yeah. In-laws, bosses, colleagues, yeah. Neighbors, friends, spouses.
Yep.
Yeah. We're all kind of trying to play our little role that we've psychologically been assigned, that we've psychologically agreed to play. Mm-hmm. You know, and we expect others to play the role they've psychologically been assigned by us without even knowing it. Mm. And this is how most relationships work. And health moves away from all of that, where we can show up to each other authentically and vulnerably with those six distinguishing markers that I just said. So
love it. Love it.
All right. You want the third thing, third and final thing?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'll try not to interrupt and have us expound again.
I love it. Interrupt all you want. Hey, this is your podcast, man.
That's like, true. I'm intently listening to what you're saying. I'm learning along the way. I get to ask the questions, but really I'm just learning alongside anybody else, you know, awesome. that's listening. So let's hear it.
The third thing that you can apply immediately under this banner of your mind and strength isn't enough, you got to have this heart and soul stuff too, is repair, repair, repair. You are going to mess up with your kids.
Mm.
You're going to. You're going to yell at them. You're going to dismiss them. You're going to choose stuff over them. You're going to mishandle a disciplinary something. Mm-hmm. You're not going to show up when you should have. Like, you're going to mess up with your kids. And when you do, what's important is that you circle back and you repair the damage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just circle back when you have space and you realize, like, oh, man, I misstepped. I overstepped. I screwed up there. You circle back and you say, hey, I just want you to know, Dad knows, like, what I said was not okay. What I did was not okay. Even asking them, how did it feel? Do you feel pressure from me? Like, how did it feel when I did this, when I didn't show up to that? Like, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And repenting. Like, I am so sorry, and will you forgive Dad for that? I want to do better. Sometimes I even just check in with my kids. How am I doing at being a dad?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you need more of with me? What do you need less of with me? Do you ever feel pressure from me? Like, I'm checking in with my kids around that.
Which is something, too, in the workspace. If you have the relationship, even checking in, if you have the relationship and it's something that's been worked on and there's the trust there, being able to check in with people that you lead, whether mm-hmm. it's your family, or say, hey, are you getting from me what you need to get from me?
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the things, and being able to have that conversation and open up, because that's going to help that person, but then also the team get better.
Yes.
And our family's a team.
Yes.
So checking in and being able to do that. And then also the antithesis of that, of not doing it, mm-hmm. is they're seeing one side of the conversation, which is yelling.
Yeah.
However they took that, it could be, is it me as a person? Yeah. Or was it the actions I did?
They don't always do that.
It's me as a person?
Yeah, a child will never blame the parent. Like, if you're having a bad day and you go off on them, a kid is never going to go, God, what's wrong with Dad? You know, now when they start getting into those independent years and they're trying to establish their independence in their teen, that's different. But I'm talking about a child is never going to go, what's wrong with Dad? A child is always going to go, what's wrong with me?
Mm.
Like, what do I need to change about me? Because obviously I'm broken in some way. I'm jacked up in some way, or Dad wouldn't be acting like this. So what do I got to fix about me? Because I'm so screwed up. Mm. I probably deserve what Dad just did, said. And it hurts and it crushes, but they're always going to take responsibility and ownership of that, which is why this third one is so critical. Repair, repair, repair. And here's the thing. You don't have to get it right that often, okay? Psychological studies say if you get it right 4 out of 10 times with your kids, they're going to be world-class human beings.
4 out of 10?
You're a parenting Hall of Fame if you get it right 4 out of 10
Batting times. 400, yeah. Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay. And you can even make up for that. Like, if you only got it right 2 out of 10 times today or this week, You can make up for that with repair, 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 and you circle back on a couple of those, and man, I tell you, your kids are going to be just fine. But here's the thing you got to understand. There is no such thing as a functional family. Okay, we hear a lot about dysfunctional families, and there's like this impression there's a functional one out there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
A functional family does not exist. There's only healthy families and unhealthy ones, and here's the difference there. A healthy family is willing to talk about their dysfunction, and an unhealthy one's not.
Ooh. Ooh.
Repair, repair, repair.
See, this is why I'm glad I'm not recording this via film yet. Because here I am, like, making these
because
sounds.
Because then we both have to be wearing pants.
Ideally. Yeah, ideally. So, you know, not a concern without the camera. But just the face. Because, again, like I said, we've talked about some of this. But for someone that's not necessarily been exposed to any of these concepts, and even me going back through it, you know, how often do you have to learn something before it really sinks in? I mean, even sitting down and learn something, you take a percentage that you'll really retain, but being disciplined and going back to it, right? Which is what you do is impactful and helps it soak in, because you are repeating the elements but adding on to them as they go, so that it's actually built in a foundational piece. Yeah. But I'm just sitting here kind of like, man, I gotta go apologize to my daughter.
Yeah.
On a couple of things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just and they go quick. It's the power of moments. We've talked about that in a moment, and that moment can be one that sticks as really good.
Yeah.
Or one that sticks as not.
Totally. And you just think about this. Like, sometimes it's hard when we're now listening to this podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already a dad, okay?
Yeah.
So you're looking through the lenses of, take those lenses off for a second. Put yourself back into that 6-year-old, 9-year-old, 12-year-old self. And imagine what it would have been like if your mom or your dad had done this with you.
Mm.
If they had circled back and apologized. Like, son, I'm sorry. That wasn't about you. That was about me. I shouldn't have said what I said. I shouldn't have done what I... Like, what would it have meant to you if your parents had done that?
Yeah. I can't speak for anyone listening. But based on a lot of conversations I've had, that would be impactful.
Mm-hmm.
In a number of ways. But here's the cool news. As dads, as husbands, whether... I've found that the people listening range from 22 years old right now, the youngest, up to the mid-40s so far.
Yeah.
So there's a whole gamut. 6 kids, 8 kids, you know, no kids officially, right? But planning on it, and then some with several on the way. Regardless of where you are, here's the fun part about this podcast, or if you find another one that's focused on it and that works best for you, go find it, but do something to learn from other guys and equip yourself. Mm-hmm. Because we've all learned. I just screwed up 32 times today. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to repair, repair, repair.
Yeah.
You know, as I get home. But learning from your experience, learning from new knowledge that we can go do, and coming together as dads to say, you know what? Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be man enough to step into something that's uncomfortable or not... popular from a status quo marketing sense or whatever that is, and educate myself and learn, and here's some things that I can go take and do. So that's...
Yes, and here's a critical thing with repair, repair, repair. I'm always tempted as a dad to add a but.
Mm.
Hey, son, dad's really sorry he yelled at you for XYZ, but you really got to learn to, you know... I'm using it to grease the tracks to, like...
Yeah.
You know, have another go.
Everything's negated before the but.
Yes.
Is what they say.
But when you use the word but, you're basically saying, forget about everything I just said. Here's what I really want to say.
That's it.
Okay.
Yep.
So no but. It's dad was wrong. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? I love you. Hug. You're done. Okay. You're done. Now here's why that matters. What that's going to do is it's going to create the attachment and the connection you need to maintain a voice in their life, to continue to train them and coach them and disciple them up into the kind of man that you are passionate and long for them to be.
Mm.
Okay? But it doesn't happen in the repair, repair, repair moment. Okay? You cannot attach both of those things and somehow multitask both goals at the same time. It's just about Dad screwed up, I'm sorry. And repair, repair, repair.
We like to get things done sometimes. So, like, let's just take care of all this at once.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It backfire.
Yeah. You'll lose relationship with your kids when they're older if you do that.
Yeah. That's a huge takeaway.
And so now all of a sudden, I hope anger is burgeoning in men everywhere, which is want.
Yeah.
For connection and sustainable intimacy with their children over the long haul.
Yeah. I hope it is too, because if you've made it this far into the podcast and you feel that, you're still hanging on, like, then that's okay. As Jake is saying, that's telling you something, right? Mm-hmm. That's telling you something. And there's things that you can go do about it and learn about it. And you go to the gym, you get physically stronger, right? Yeah. So that also helps mentally in many ways. Reading books. What I really like that I've not heard before is the difference between emotionalism and feelings. Mm-hmm. And so not going and building that emotionalism element, but the feelings element is another strength element, strength of heart element to go and build.
Yeah. It's not about I'm emotional and not rational. It's about knowing where I'm at.
Yep.
And you might not see any emotion externally from me, but good heart system work, good feelings work is I know where I'm at. And if I know where I'm at, what that means is I'm not going to perform for you or manage you or try to control you or try to caretake you. Like, if I know where I'm at, I'm not going to be looking for myself through your eyes. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I'm going to be able to see you and actually show up from my fullness to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what feelings work get you.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Dude, thank you. Great opportunity.
It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. And time flies so fast whenever we do this thing. So maybe we'll sit down another time.
Sure.
Maybe some guys will have questions. So guys, gals, whoever's listening, if you do have questions, where's the place that they could... We can send them to goplumline.com.
Yep, that's the best place because you can schedule a call with me there.
Yep.
It's free. You know, I'll give you time. You can also, if you're going, I got enough anger, I'm ready to jump in. Like, I want to be in a group where I'm learning this stuff and I'm practicing it so that I can start to experience the healing and transformation that's going to help me show up as, you know, a more full version of myself. You can apply to a group on there.
Yeah.
You know, we always have groups going throughout the year. We got retreats that we do throughout the year. Just go to goplumline.com, GOPLUMLINE.com, no B in Plumline.
Okay.
And let's connect up there.
Perfect. What about on for anyone that does interactive social?
Go Plumline. Yep, at Go Plumline on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all the stuff.
Easy peasy. Yep. I love it. Well, thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
We'll let you know what questions and takeaways, and people know where to find you now. But always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Zach.
Guys and gals, thank you for taking the time to listen through. As always, we hope that you have some things that you can take away and apply to your life as you are on your journey to becoming the skilled dad. If you want more information, you can go to theskilleddad.com. If this story is one that you can see as beneficial or powerful for a friend, by all means, please share it, send them our way, and we look forward to having you in on the next conversation. You're listening to The Skilled Dad.